Yeah.
She said,
a Chinese girl living
in the YWs there.
Yeah.
And a club called the Cosmos Club, I think that was, she was living. And she gave a talk to a smaller group. I went there because I learned her the Chinese Langan. Other people, foreigners, all have a short speech. She said, well, American attitude changes so rapidly. At first, 42, 43, until General Stilwell's being kicked out by Chiang Kai-shek. And they were friendly because China had fought 8 years and so long, so determined. But after the war is over, and the former enemy, Japanese, again came forward. And as if Chinese, they look at you with a different eyes and different attitude. What have we done? One day when America was beaten by Japan after Pearl Harbor, we were saints. Today we are devils. Oh, she was strong. So that's the, really was the situation. During the war years, the first few years, oh, everywhere asked me to speak and pay me highly, just prove and appreciate. When Madame Jiang was here, 43, at the Hardwood Bowl and all that, it was great. All the poems, I had some diary, I think I clipped, and also many manuscripts sent to Ambassador Hotel. One room was filled with that. And then one day or twice, two people called me. One was a lady, said, I sent my manuscript and sent a basket of flowers and with a note and asking for just a brief introduction so I can send the manuscript to the publisher. Can you do something? Well, I said, I'll do my best. I can't make any promise. I sit there. Too many, I saw them. So one day we were there for dinner, Madame Jiang and all her relatives. And I mentioned to one student, I said, well, answer them. You say time is so important, yes, we can't have enough secretaries and we don't want to just type a thing she just put a name on. Many autograph seekers, mm-hmm. Many things. So it was very tough. Then people send a lot of money, they didn't send a receipt. A private school in Rolling Hills called Chadwick Seaside School in Rolling Hills. And I spoke there many times and I gave the commencement address and they contributed money. The student denied themselves. One day when Madame Jiang was here, I was asked to just say a few brief words at the school assembly. The student contributed $200. So I gave to one of her secretaries, I said, now, send a receipt. And the envelope, everything is clear. After a month, I called up Rolling Hills, Mrs. Chadwick. He said, no, we haven't received any answer yet. So I called up the one in charge was a student, my informer from St. John's. So I could say, I said, this, you are doing harm to China. You better get some aid, something, stamp, and mail back. To this day, I hold against Madame Jiang. One time I threatened, I said, there should be a public record of how many, what received from where did the money go, instead of private pocket. I feel that has never been done. So that during that time was quite a happy reaction from all over. The motion picture, all the made, we had tears. I got six tickets, four for Chairman of History, two for the Dean.
At that time, would you say that Chinese community actually very unified.
Yes, and support. Oh, China was fine. America just have a new attitude. I went to Santa Barbara's lecture to Chinese groups. I have a picture like this, big, all Chinese, and Chinese Tongzijun, the Boy Scouts, and on duty, and all this beautiful, showing China is going to get somewhere.
But how long did the Chinese actually enjoy that sort of
well, until treatment? I think began, I hear criticism, condemnation from the communist group, from the socialist group, from the liberal group, when Stilwell was forced to withdraw. And he is a good military strategist, but his ways, they call him a vinegar zhou, vinegar zhou, vinegar zhou. He called Jiang, I think, peanut, or called President Roosevelt peanut, or something. Recently, a book by Barbara Tuchman on Stilwell papers.
Yes.
I think there's a little too much on one side for Stilwell against nationalist leaders. Mm-hmm. I think the nationalist leaders were wrong because they were arrogant. Oh, I could see, and when Madame Jiang was guest to the White House, but both sides. You see, this is not revealed yet, I think, but I don't think it's not any military secret. When President Roosevelt at the dinner party said, Madam Jiang, how is it that I learned that the Generalissimo sent troops against communists, not Japanese, our common enemy? She gave a look. She said, where did you get that? That's the first time I have heard of that. I'll cable back and ask for information. He was wrong. At the dinner party, you embarrass the First Lady, no matter what. Stories came out. Oh, she is so arrogant, and so she was arrogant. And she would not use the common sheets for bed. Use silk. But they didn't know she has shingles. She has problem. So often people ask me, I say, well, that you have to excuse. And anything can stop the itching or can help her. And then one morning, President Roosevelt, on the back of Jeanette, I told you the story.
No, not yet.
And, hello, my boy, good morning, how are you? She gave him a look and an aide to the president immediately, as a girl. Young lady, how are you? How are you? So at the Ambassador Hotel, when we were at the luncheon, and Edna asked, are you going back to the White House from here or what? Oh, I want to go back to that old dump. Yeah. And also arrogant. And then I've asked her, are you going to attend UCLA? Well, what can they teach me? I heard that. Well, I said, at least they can teach you to be punctual, hand in the papers. I don't mention that. I failed. You failed me. Do you treat the American student the same with the same hardness and harshness as you did me? I said, well, I don't know. I don't know how to answer you. I thought I'd treat you fairly. I asked you plenty of time, your own choice of subject, to make a report. And also I told you, if your uncle, the Generalissimo, reasonably ordered a regiment or even a division to get to a certain destination, they dilly-dally, didn't do anything. The last day they started to march. I say, how can you explain when you do that? I said, if he says, give you enough time, you don't get there, you will not be punished. I'll give you an A instead of an F. She couldn't do it.
This is the girl you mentioned yesterday.
Yes.
Yekong,
daughter. Er Xiaojie, second, only the second daughter.
So
she was intelligent, but arrogant. And she was a friend of the man who was shot by Joe.
So during the World War II years, Chinese were generally treated better.
Oh yes.
Much better.
41 to 44, that's three years.
So would you say that in 46, when you purchased this piece of property or this house, was because of that time the American already changed their attitudes toward Chinese or just the...
Yes, they have some sectors, I mean, they depend on what sector of the Americans. Here, the average, yes, but some of the older sisters, like the one clear across, that was an old house, and Mrs. Hayes, her husband came to call, and he was a carpenter in a motion picture place. And he said, well, you have good fireplace. I know this house. I lived here 40 some years. And I can bring you a truckload of cuttings of nice boards, 2x4, 3x4, 4x4, and the boards you can burn, a truckload, but you pay me $3 for the trucking. I said, oh, wonderful. At that time they couldn't drive up, and something in the way, so I could gradually put in the garage, old garage, not like this one. So Mrs. Hayes has the old prejudice, and talked to some neighbors, oh, here's Chinaman moved in here. No racial restrictions. Mm-hmm. And he said, well, I don't like Ed, her husband. Oh, bow to Mr. Han or Mrs. Han, and college or university, what of it? So she's crude and never educated, you see. And the man worked in the studio, so learned to be international, to be kind, because they have Jews and Chicanos and some Japanese, some Chinese. So he was more international. Mm-hmm. Later, the lady was converted. So when Mr. Hayes was sick, I went over and made certain suggestions and so on. She was much better, improved. Uh-huh. Oh, especially her nephew and niece living in a little house at the corner that she owned. Uh-huh. So she changed her attitude.
I see. Yeah. And did you mention that you actually taught at USC for a short period
of
time?
No, I didn't teach there. I had close connection. When I was a graduate student, I wrote articles to be published for money. Mm-hmm. They have a journal called The Personalist, Literature, Philosophy, Religion. Mm-hmm. So I wrote this more of the literature side and philosophy. Mm-hmm. I wrote some aspect of ancient Chinese poetry, the philosophy of nature in Chinese painting. Mm-hmm. And I forgot what.
So others. Some other articles. So you have a very close relations to
with USC, mm-hmm. because I lectured to the Faculty of Philosophy, mm-hmm. under Dr. Ralph Fleuling. Mm-hmm. They have a building, I think, named after him. Mm-hmm. And his son, I think it's David, architect, designed the building, mm-hmm. with a Diogenes with a lantern, seeking for honest men.
I see.
And also their chapel. Confucian and different great thinkers.
Oh, I see.
Yeah, you haven't been
no,
seen that.
No, well, I haven't paid attention to that. So, I always like to ask this question about how you get the job at different places like UCLA.
At UCLA.
Because at that time, probably very, very few Orientals.
And also, the whole school was pro-Japanese. 1938. Friends of ours took us to run around there, then where we stopped, I don't know, a restaurant, we have evening late snack. Mm-hmm. And I saw Japanese and faculty, oh, they were laughing, have a good time. I said to my friends, Americans, and says, those are Japanese. Yes, oh, UCLA is pro-Japanese. And oh, their consulate do better than our Chinese consulate. Government documents and some honor gave to the leaders.
Just
they did the same. A doctor, Professor Paisan Treat, T-R-E-A-T, Stanford.
Mm-hmm.
He was absolutely decorated by Japanese government, a strong supporter of Japan to the last. And
so did they hire any Japanese professors?
Big money.
Did they hire any Japanese professors?
Over there?
At UCLA,
here.
Yeah.
UCLA, yes. My
predecessor. Before you.
My predecessor was Japanese, Kawai. K-A-W-A-I, I think, okay. Kawai. I met him later. Then he went to Japan for a visit. But most people know he was under order by the Japanese government to go to Japan. Then he went to Shanghai as director of English newspapers, propaganda for Japan, for the puppet government. He was there all during the whole year of war, just like this Tokyo Rose. For the other.
Right. So you, when you came to Los Angeles, you applied for the job at UCLA.
No, I didn't. Yes, this way. We have known this. I mentioned this widow, Hussey. Her husband was in the history department. This Mrs. Hussey, her maiden name was Martha. I think it's Martha. Martha Freeman. Mm-hmm. I know Dr. Freeman. One time acting president of Pomona College.
Mm-hmm.
And they traveled to Peking. Mm-hmm. She stayed a year in Peking because her brother was a teacher in Tsinghua College.
Mm-hmm. I see.
Yeah, Mansfield Freeman.
Mm-hmm.
And when she was there in high school, I was in college.
Mm-hmm.
We know. So naturally, I called on her.
Mm-hmm.
She invited us for dinner with other faculty members. And then another one is Professor Joseph Spencer, geography department.
Mm-hmm.
And he was in the Chinese Yanwushu Salt Revenue Administration,
mm-hmm.
working there. You see, I have these two. They both supported my application. So that's one of the reasons. And then the man who is the head of history and political science in Redlands, who urged and forced and planned for a job for me.
Mm-hmm.
And so he, the school here, told me that his letter made it, there were 30 applicants.
Uh-huh.
30 applicants, only five were Chinese.
Mm-hmm.
The rest were missionaries evacuated from China, so they want the job. And so Earl Cranston was the one who wrote my background. He was, I regard him as my first American brother. He was in China. We went to Shandong, to Taishan, and he paid my way all as a friend. And also I lived in Beidahe Beach for the summer. I taught him Chinese, he taught me English.
Uh-huh. That all the way back to...
Yes, that's Earl Cranston.
Mm-hmm.
So to get into UCLA, one man immediately took opposition or blocking my way. It's Mr. Professor Frank Klimberg. Frank Klimberg, he was in the British history.
Mm-hmm.
And he has a course one time, History of India, that's British India. So when I came, I was appointed to teach History of Modern China, history of India and the Indies, 20th century Far East. So I took his interest from the British, and also I had more students than when once he had. So he didn't, people knew he was a gossiper. He all went to the authorities and talked this and that, report this and that. And but later we became very good friends. Every year now we hear from his son, who is professor in Chapel Hill, North Carolina, professor of history, Frank Jr. He always in the letter to us said how during his parents' last years, we were so good to them, made them as if they were still good, happy people. He knew the early years, the father opposed my position and held my promotion for a while.
So talking about promotion, did you have any very smooth?
It's hard. You see, my first 6 years was lecturer. When I first arrived, they put a title visiting professor.
Mm-hmm.
You had no rank, no one, just you were a professor there, you are visiting, just temporary. And later, this man thought that's too high, say lecturer. So, lecturer. For 6 years, I had the position of a lecturer in history. And that has no tenure until after 6 years. And so now my retirement fund, those 6 years, I get the pension from the state, not under the region. So from 57, I was associate professor, was under the region's annuity retirement.
Oh, I see.
That, last night we were talking about a particular professor who was chairman when I was promoted. He was liberal. He fought the, director of this ACLU. You know, ACLU is American Civil Liberty Union.
Mm-hmm.
He was a liberal. So he didn't want me, being an Oriental, be held back, held down.
Mm-hmm.
So he had that justice feeling.
Mm-hmm.
So he was instrumental, made me associate professor when he was chairman. He was chairman only 2 years.
What was his name?
John Coy.
Oh.
His authority in California history, I mentioned. C-A-U-G-H-T-Y, John W. Coy. Oh, he has produced a number of good students who became quite known. And his son-in-law was my student, who took Kissinger's job when Kissinger was made Secretary of State, Director of Institute of World Affairs. For 5 years, until Kissinger retired. When Nixon finished, he retired. Thought he would go back there, and then they had someone else now. But still, he is dean of the faculty. Ernest May. He became very a liberal. He is from Texas. His father is a noted lawyer. And still has a southern prejudice against the color. But he married the daughter of John Coy. Coy is so liberal, so he became a liberal. And you see, when he first was in my class, you can see the transition or the change, the early attitude. I was lecturing, a colored girl came in about 1 minute late. I just say, any question? And today our general discussion, our lecture would be centered on this. Sat right beside him. He got up, moved several rows back. Oh, I said, Mr. May, will you please come back to your old seat? Give me a look. I said, move. Today you can't treat students that way.
Yeah.
that time he obeyed. Oh, even a baseball player, this way in my class, I said, now sit up, please. He sat up.
Yeah. Talking about students, at that time, were there any Chinese students at UCLA or in your class?
There were some, not many. Now we have plenty.
Yeah, right.
And
so how did the Chinese students get along
with the American
students?
I think quite well, because their English may be limited if they come from the mainland, I mean from China. But they study hard, especially those who could afford just to work full time. Most Americans in public school, they work part time, at least. So the attitude of the faculty from 41, I joined UCLA, by 43, height of China's reputation, height of friendship, and all friends invited me, invited us everywhere. So then once we get acquainted and really know one another, also we return the courtesies, just became good friends. Not on any issue will have any dispute, especially after a little contact, we know. Some people will have social contact once, they felt, well, we are different, and so we don't have any more. Some they felt was unique. Here, Chinese and a wife American, and they invited us, and especially with the unusual guests. The chairman of the Board of Regents, Edward Dixon, became our very good friend. One occasion is a prejudice on the part of Dr. Sproul, the president at the time. After martial mediation, the commencement address by the president at Berkeley, he quoted more on the criticism of nationalist government in favor of the communists. Then when I heard that, I felt bad. Especially the UCLA commencement, I invite the Consul General and his wife come with us to go. On the way to the, in procession, go to the commencement area, Mr. Dixon said, Yusuf, I want to ask you, did you hear Bob's commencement address yesterday? I said, yes. What do you feel? I said, naturally, you understand me. All right, I'll tell Bob, cut that paragraph. He cut it. Well, all getting filing in on the platform, chairman of Board of Regents, close to the president there. He said, now Bob, you cut that out. And somebody must have reported that he talked with me on the way. Sproul, especially Berkeley, just hope and hope UCLA will not go as high as Berkeley. Berkeley is the home base and the control everything. So my committee was composed for promotion by Berkeley, an advisory group, and two of them I offended. I'm just that temperament. I said, what is right? I will be not arrogant, nothing, I must be straight. Let me see what his name, he's professor of sociology, Eberhardt. He wrote a book on Chinese festivals. Mm-hmm. I was to book review, I did. Made three revisions. I thought, well, not because I'm fearful that he will block me, but I said, well, colleague, and maybe I'm too rigid. So I read to my wife, and she said, well, this is all right. Just send it, no matter how he feels. And in your book, other people review, you feel the same way. Mm-hmm. And so that's one enemy. The other one is Professor Woodbridge Bingham. Mm-hmm. He was born in Japan from a missionary family. I was chairman in the Occidental. We have the Pacific Coast branch meeting, and he was to give a paper. All was 20 minutes, or maybe 1 or 2 minutes beyond. He spoke 40 minutes. And he had 3x5 cards, 3 or 4, thumbed through, back, and so on. Oh, it is illogical and not prepared, naturally. I was sharp. I was embarrassed. Double the time. Other people look at me, so on. So I got up. I said, thank you for your lecture, and I hope before too long we all can share your research result by your publication. He meant I knew. He knew I was sarcastic. Mm-hmm. So another paper called another one. So that he became my enemy. He was my arch enemy, worse than Eberhard. Eberhard, he was a foreigner from Germany, escaped from the Nazis. So this has problems.
Yeah, it took how long? I mean,